Tonight on The Blurred Truth, I'm very happy to present Susie Hansen from New Zealand, the founding director of Eufocus NZ, based out of Tauranga. And Susie is a sighting investigator, UFO researcher and experiencer. So welcome, Susie, to The Blurred Truth.
Thank you very much, Paul. I'm very pleased to talk to you this evening.
You've got an exciting new book out. Please tell us about that, just to give us some background on that publication.
Okay, it's called The Dual Soul Connection, The Alien Agenda for Human Advancement.
Exciting,
eh? It basically documents my life going back right back to early childhood, and in fact earlier than that, to before I incarnated on the planet.
Wow.
And talks about my journey through realising that I was having contact with extraterrestrial intelligences. I have a lot of conscious memory of those experiences that developed over the years. It's not just regression material.
Mm-hmm.
I had varying degrees of conscious memory, from full memory of events, some events, to only partial memory of others and snippets of others. So over a period of time, I began to look at my experiences and saw a pattern developing, saw an actual process developing, and decided to start documenting that. And the book has been contributed to by Dr. Rudy Schild, who's an emeritus astrophysicist at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics in Cambridge, USA. And he examined the physics side of what I was talking about, because the book involves quite a lot of alien technology that I have observed and used.
Yeah, that was fabulous, having Rudy involved, Dr. Rudy Shields. Other people might know him from the Free group.
Yes, that's right.
And with the passing of Edgar Mitchell earlier this year in February, there's been a bit of a baton transfer to some of the other members, but it's certainly growing in its stature and the quality of work that it does. I do know a bit about your background there, Susie, and you had actually some interesting things happen in childhood with golden lights and things in your bedroom and things like that, and your parents handled that quite gently, didn't they?
Yes, that's right. Mainly my mother, but it seemed to run in my family that paranormal things happened around that side of the family.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the great aunts, etc., were psychics and were involved in early healing groups, etc., in Auckland and New Zealand. So I guess that was the norm in that side of the family.
Very good, very good. I'm a psychic myself, so I certainly appreciate hearing things like that come down genetic lines.
Mm.
Was most of your, when you moved into being the school teacher role, that was outside of Auckland, is that right? When that big contact experience happened there, you might be able to take the listeners through that.
That's right. I was in my first few years of teaching in a region of North Island called Hawke's Bay. It's really sheep station country down there, with a couple of large cities in that area and small towns.
Yeah.
And I'd been travelling on a lonely country back road with my flatmate, and it was just late afternoon with beautiful sunshine out over the paddocks and really pleasant sunny afternoon, just starting to see the trees on the tops of the hills looking a little bit like black silhouettes, and just the sun starting to go down on an autumn afternoon. We saw some strange lights in the sky that behaved oddly, flicking off, appearing next to us, flicking off, appearing along the hills again. This went on for a few seconds, and we sort of argued about what it might be.
Mm-hmm.
And then they disappeared, and so there was quite a bit of relief between us, and then they came up. The light came up behind us and enveloped the car in the most blazing light I've ever seen.
Wow!
And had the feeling of every time slowing down, feeling like I was in slow motion, and then both of us obviously lost consciousness. The next thing that we recall is that it's pitch black, and there's the feeling of the car hitting the ground. The lights come on, the motor starts, and we're at the far end of the straight, 2.5 kilometre straight that we'd just previously, in our memory, been at the beginning of on a sunny afternoon.
Mm.
So obviously there was around about an hour and a half just over of missing time whereby the sun had gone down and something had happened in the interim.
Wow. I remember you saying that remember hearing that your flatmate had a science background and was pretty disturbed by what had happened.
Yes, that's right. I think it turned his understanding of the world and his place in it completely upside down. And he was quite reluctant to talk about it at first. He stuck to the concept and the idea that it must have been a fast-moving helicopter. But, of course, the resulting experience discounted that, and he didn't want to go there. He found it easier to deal with it if he just completely tried to forget about it and put it out of his life.
So do you have recall about that specific scenario and what happened after that for you personally, and who might have been the ETs of that craft?
Well, I didn't have any memory at the time, and would have been about 20 years later, possibly a bit longer, that I'd mulled over whether or not I should have regressive therapy on some of the experiences I'd had in life.
Mm-hmm.
I resisted it for about 20 years because back in the 80s and 90s, there was a lot of controversy around the idea of having hypnosis.
Yeah.
And so I resisted that for quite some time. And then one day I basically just woke up and knew that I had to do it and that there was a reason why. And that was one of the experiences that I looked into and to see what had happened and where we'd been taken. And naturally, I discovered that through that process.
That would take a bit of integrating, wouldn't it? Because, you'd have that awareness at some level, but then for it to be 100% concrete or whatever that means would have disturbed the psyche a bit.
That's right. I think I took maybe 10 or 12 years really to come to terms with the idea of what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Because around about that time there was the early abduction literature in the late 70s and, mm-hmm. and 80s
mm-hmm.
and 90s, early 90s coming out of the US. And
yeah.
a lot of that was quite negative and frightening.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't want to think that that sort of thing was happening to me. And it took quite some time for me to actually realise that I wasn't being harmed, I wasn't being hurt,
yeah.
and that actually the memories I was retaining were actually positive and there was nothing untoward happening at all.
Yeah, that's good. I just wonder how many people out there have had the bejesus scared out of them from Whit Strieber's communion books
yes.
and things like that.
That's right.
I mean, I've read some of his other books and Breakthrough is a brilliant book, but I just can't. Really, I don't want to know about most of the stuff that's covered in his stuff. There's better stories, isn't there? And yours,
yours
is certainly one of them.
Yeah, there are positive, but by the same token, I do acknowledge that there are people who've had some extraordinarily awful experiences, and
yep.
And that's part of the whole picture as well.
Yes, yes. So once you've integrated that across that time frame, what was next for you in your journey? And because you had direct conscious interaction soon after then, didn't you?
Yes, I had. After living in Hawke's Bay for a while, I moved further north up the coastline to teach in quite a remote area north of Gisborne
mm-hmm.
on the east coast. And that's where quite a lot of incidents happened at the time of the Gisborne UFO flap.
Mm-hmm.
That was quite a pronounced period of time from 78 through to about 80, 82, petering off after that.
Mm-hmm.
But that was during the time when the Kaikoura lights occurred down over Cook Strait, Christchurch and Wellington.
Mm-hmm.
And the Kaikoura lights kind of eclipsed what was happening in this whole East Coast region where there were hundreds and hundreds of sightings happening.
Wow.
And I was a young teacher at the time living in a remote rural area, and that's where I had some more missing time, some quite frightening experiences, again on country roads or in the house that I was living in.
Please, define frightening. That's too exciting a word to skip over.
Okay, well, we were coming home from the city of Gisborne on one occasion on a Friday night. We'd been down, we'd had a day off school to go grocery shopping, which took 3 hours to drive to the shops and 3 hours to drive back again. So naturally, it was a very long day. We left in the mid-evening after having dinner with friends and drove up the coast. I think we got to quite a remote area high above the sea, just slightly inland at about 10:30 at night. And we came over the brow of a hill. It was very, very dark, just the headlights of the car going. And as we came over the brow of the hill, the entire valley down in front of us maybe a kilometre and a half long in a wide country valley, just lit up with the most brilliant silver white light.
Wow.
In a dome shape, in a perfect dome shape, and
wow.
You could see every tree lit up like daylight. And I think the most extraordinary thing about the quality of this light was that there didn't appear to be shadows, and yet you were able to see each object, each tree, quite clearly.
Beautiful.
So that was quite terrifying. And then we had noticed that our arms and legs were going numb and tingly, and basically just faded out. I don't know, passed out or went into some altered state. And the next thing we knew was that it was like we suddenly woke up. It was cold. The windows had sort of misted up with us breathing, and the valley was in darkness again. And we just kind of started the car and took off.
Was there much
and
missing
time? Looking back, our behaviour at the time was quite unusual in that we didn't remember exactly what had happened. We didn't query what had happened. We didn't look around to see if we could see anything. And we had no memory the next morning of putting away many boxes of groceries.
Wow.
And had some strange things happen, like sensitive hearing and sensitive, like a frightened rabbit feeling for about 2 or 3 days.
When you say we, does that mean family members? And
yes, it was my former husband and I.
Wow. And and he had similar sort of experiences?
No, he hasn't had the same sort of experiences as me, but he was present on occasions when there was periods of missing time or anomalous things happened like this event.
The tingling and the numbness and that, though, he had that as well,
yes,
at that time?
Yes, yeah.
Wow. That probably would have given him a bit of a freak out as well. Wow. Well, that's and then what about so moving on from there? You have some visual contacts coming up, don't you?
Yes, I've had quite a number of actual sightings of craft over the years, and that's also helped precipitate me into the whole sighting investigation arena in New Zealand. A number of things happened over the years where I would predict or say to someone that I was with, well, they're around or something's going to happen in a minute or we're going to see something in a minute, and that would actually happen and was witnessed by other people. So that was quite interesting. It often, my thoughts and feelings and intuition were confirmed at quite a scary rate.
Yeah,
and I learnt after a while to keep rather quiet about it because you say something like that too often, you get looked at sideways. So for quite a while, especially when my children were young, I kind of put the lid on things and was very careful about who I spoke to about these events.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any safe confidants?
Yes, I was very fortunate to have met a lady called Daisy Kirkby in New Zealand, who still remains a very good friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
Daisy was one of the first contact and abduction researchers in New Zealand, and I got to know her, and it was very comforting and reassuring to be able to talk to her about some of these incidents.
Oh, good on Daisy, because that's too big a thing to keep between the ears sometimes.
Yes, that's right.
Mm. And what about your children at that time? Were they registering any of that pressure or having similar things that they were speaking of?
Yes, I don't sort of talk about my children publicly too much,
no.
But yes, one in particular has been involved in this phenomenon, and I refer to that in the book, and and I do talk about some of the things that I have observed on craft with my son and other children, so there is reference to that in the book.
Totally respect your confidentiality there, by the way, so yeah, that was handled well. So the book, when you move through to that time frame, that's quite exciting, and I was so thrilled to hear the interview with George Knack, or George Knapp, I should say, one of my favourite UFO presenters in the world. His video, what do we love? Secrets of the Black Ops or something he does.
Yeah.
It's a fabulous video.
And so
moving with your book, then the insights in there are phenomenal, and the experiences that you had were phenomenal.
Yes, I've certainly had quite a range, and as I said, I was just lucky that there were a couple of close people I could talk to, like Daisy, but also the late Harvey Cook, who ran one of the longest running UFO groups actually here in Tauranga, and so it was good to be able to talk things out with him on occasions too.
Great. So good to hear you had that good level of support there. Some of the most fascinating things about your story that piqued my interest was that you were in a craft and you got an opportunity to fly it.
Yes, and I have met a number of other experiencers, just a small handful of people over the years who have experienced similar. This was when I was putting the manuscript together. Some years ago, I'd seen a video of Dr. Rudy Shield speaking at a conference, and I instantly, upon seeing him and hearing his voice, felt as if I knew him, even though I didn't. And I had this burning desire to contact him and talk to him about some of my experiences. That didn't actually happen for quite a few years until I was able to get his contact details.
Yeah.
But when I put the manuscript together, there were a few chapters that I thought, well, I'll send him some of the tamer chapters and see what he thinks of those. And if he thinks they're okay and he understands them, or he feels they're, you know, there's something valid about them, then maybe I can move to some of the ones that involve technology. So I did it that way with Rudy.
Yeah.
And he kept saying, yes, I understand this from a physics perspective, so send me more. And in the end, I sent him a couple of chapters that were maybe a little bit of a stretch for him. And I was quite surprised that he came back and said to me, well, actually, these are the ones that have got the most detail in about consciousness and physics that I understand. So this particular chapter called Passing Through the Planet, where I describe flying a small scout craft, was one of those chapters that I thought might just stretch him too far, and he absolutely loved it and came back with quite a lot of comments about it.
How exciting. And in that chapter is as clear as it sounds, because indeed you actually did fly a scout craft through planet Earth. So please,
that's it, just sounds quite phenomenal, but this is where physics comes into it, where the craft didn't actually plow through the ground, so to speak. It moved into some other dimension. They explained it to me at the time as moving sideways, carrying along in a parallel route and moving back in again, if I can put it that way.
Yeah.
So there was a change in the status of the craft, the molecular status, that allowed it to move from point A to point B, basically through the mass of the planet.
I've heard Stephen Greer and some other people doing night watches and things, and they describe the craft changing molecular structure, light structure, whatever, and then just go vroom straight into the side of a cliff and keep going.
Yes.
And sounds fantastic in the true sense of the word to us, but just a level of physics that we're not currently allowed to be exposed to. So that was pretty exciting. So you got your wings there. I heard you say that you managed to tip the wings of the UFO and then flew it with manual control, and then your mind, which you've much preferred to do.
Yes, not so much the wings, but the tilt or the wobble of the craft when it's in certain flight mode.
Yep.
And we had to use both the manual mode of moving what is rather like a joystick kind of thing.
Yep.
But much smaller, and also using it by connecting to the organic computer of the craft and flying it telepathically.
Wow. I know the many a person can easily read about various people's contact scenarios, but what's beautifully unique and special about your book is talking about future realities for Earth and for us as humanity, and various extraterrestrial involvement into doing that as gently and as helpfully as possible.
Yes, that's right. I think there's quite a lot of people out there who think that we're somehow or other going to be saved by the ETs, or that we're just going to somehow or other become light beings ourselves eventually, and that everything's just going to be fine. But that really isn't the case from my perspective.
Yep.
And the agenda that I describe in the book is a positive one. Mm-hmm. And it's actually run and facilitated by a number of ET species, as well as what I refer to as our universal governing body, which is a spiritual body that oversees the incarnation of spirit souls into our planet, so coming down here to lead lives as humans. And there's quite a wide background that goes into this agenda that I describe, and we are a part of it, of course. And at the same time as being a part of the planning, we're part of the implementation, and we have to carry it out. And so the whole agenda is one of helping us to help ourselves, or creating change from within. So rather than coming in and interfering, they're actually educating us in quite large numbers on craft, mm-hmm. and teaching us a better way, teaching us physics and consciousness and telepathy and all those kinds of things, and different appreciation of our companion species on the planet.
Nice.
And where we could go if we set our minds to it, what we could do. And so this change then comes through generations on a planet, and hopefully there will be sweeping changes made by what I call a third wave of children and humans, some of them now in adulthood, who will carry this out in the years to come.
That sounds so fascinating. Many of the listeners might consider themselves a spontaneous biochemical accident or purposeful accident, you're talking of a degree of co-creation from other realms to come to here in such special ways to be on planet Earth in 2016. Is that pretty much what I'm hearing?
Yes, that's right. And I think this word "we make agreements" is kind of trite. It has been overused a little bit, mm-hmm. I think. But basically, that is what many of us have done as we come into the planet, agreeing to do certain things at this point in time. Of course, we've all come here with our own aims and goals as souls to achieve learning or to experience things on this planet in different ways. But then there are some people involved in this agenda who've agreed in the soul state to come and carry out certain tasks that help to move us gently along the way of this evolution and this hopefully an upward spiral of spiritual growth, because the entities that I've had contact with, which were largely the greys, but mm-hmm. other species as well, mm-hmm. have talked about how we have become a retrograde society in terms of spirituality.
Yeah.
It hasn't kept up with our technological advances,
yeah.
and many of the technological advances that we have developed have been used in negative ways against our own species.
Yeah.
So this is coming back into the flow of the river, if I want to put it that way, from the stagnant areas on either side, we're getting back into the flow of the universe and starting to move in the direction that we need to go in order to be able to have greater understanding of ourselves and our planet before we can actually step out and have an understanding of other species in our vicinity.
So you would have just put the wind up a lot of people then when you mentioned the grey word. So it's rare to hear somebody in their camp, Susie. So please give us a little view on who you saw. I know you saw at least three different species or varieties of them at different times. The super tall ones in the craft and tall.
Terms of the greys, I've seen them of different sizes and heights. There's the shorter ones and slightly taller ones. But really, I don't go along with this differentiation of the short and the tall, and one's a clone and one isn't. That isn't what I have found at all.
Yep, yep.
I've found that there are some who are shorter, there are some who are taller, just as there are humans.
She's just sounding really normal, just like us then.
That's right. And but I have also seen what I call their rootstock species. That's just the name I've given them, where they're on the craft, they are like an elder, if you want to use that word. They're mm-hmm. extremely, extremely lined mm-hmm. and unusual looking, and they turn up at different occasions on the craft where there are tests or assessments being conducted with humans and other alien species overseeing it. And Also, I've seen mantis beings on a craft on a couple of occasions. I've never seen a reptilian. Mm-hmm. But what I have seen is a lot of mixed species greys where they have mixed in their genetic programs with other species who are quite unknown to me.
Yeah.
So they all have personalities. I have always found they have a sense of humour. They have a deep sense of love. But unlike us, they don't express themselves physically with facial expressions and a lot of bodily gesture. And I think this is where some people, if they're in a very fearful state or they come out of an altered state that they've been put into to protect them, and they see are faced with these entities and what may be taking place, they can become very fearful and not pick up on the telepathy that they're getting from them. They just see a mask-like face
mm-hmm.
that doesn't have facial expression, and the fear sets in.
Wow. So probably the greatest PR exercise of recent times would have been the movie Paul coming out of Hollywood in the last
yes.
couple of years.
That's
with,
right.
With that grey-like gentleman with plenty of humour about him.
Mm-hmm.
The mantid experience, how was that? It was, you know, obviously felt safe and accepted and appreciated and that
well,
with
most
of them.
On one occasion where I was taken into a room and I was actually given some healing.
Yeah,
and the entity was seated at a desk, and I was got a bit of a shock when I walked in the door because he was quite clearly about 7 feet tall, seated down. Seated, he was you know, virtually the same height as me. I'm not very tall,
mm-hmm.
But nothing fearful, nothing untoward happened on that occasion. And in fact, on any of the experiences I've had on craft, I have not had terrifying experiences of any kind. I've always been purposeful, leading to something, a lot of education, a lot of having knowledge imparted to you, being taught things, and in particular, as a child, having memory of sitting in a group with other greys, human children and mixed species, and interacting with the use of the mind. So there were not toys around like you might find in a human play centre or kindergarten. They were created with the mind in holographic form,
yep.
and objects were levitated, etc. So that was learning to imitate what they were doing by being trained to use the telepathic and brain capacities.
Oh, that sounds sensational, doesn't it? So for the listeners, a little bit more about your book here. What's the most positive message that could come out of that for somebody, and then how do they get in touch or get in touch with you, and also how to access that book so that they can buy a beautiful hard copy of it?
Okay, well, I guess the most positive message that I'm putting out there is that that there is an agenda taking place, and certainly the agenda I'm talking about, because, I mean, there are other people and other writers and researchers who present different agendas, but certainly the agenda that I describe is purposeful and it is positive, and it involves humans helping ourselves. It involves teaching us and educating us and moving us along the track of technology and consciousness side by side, rather than one lagging behind and the other one taking precedence, as we have at the moment that I mentioned before. I think that my book presents experiences that I believe are touching, because I touch on my childhood and some of the experiences I had and how I viewed them at the time. It touches on me on board with my child as a soul and my child as a child, as a human child.
Mm-hmm.
And the journey that I have gone through in facing derision, facing ridicule, overcoming my own fears and piecing the pieces together. I don't claim to know the answer to everything. All I can do is put out there to the readers what I have experienced and how I have dealt with it, and let them make up their own minds as to how they feel about it.
Wow.
The book can be purchased as an Amazon Kindle,
mm-hmm.
And the paperback version can be purchased directly from me at my website, www.communicatorlink.com.
Okay, beautiful. Now, I also know that later in the year, Friday the 28th of October. You're going to be the guest speaker in Brisbane for people that are in that region of Queensland and East Coast and Australia. You're the guest speaker at the UFORQ meeting on Friday the 28th of October at the Kenmore Library. And then the following Tuesday night here on the very Sunshine Coast, where this recording's coming from, 1st of November, you're going to be guest speaker at the Sunshine Coast UFO Paranormal Group. So we're certainly looking forward to meeting you in person. And thank you so much for this lovely, warm and educational and inspiring communication about being an experiencer in that this way. And people can also follow your work at UFocusNZ. Do you want to just rattle off that website for them, please?
Yes, my nationwide sighting investigation website is www.ufocusnz.org.nz, and the book and my work in the contact field is communicatorlink.com.
And you're on Facebook too, aren't you? So is
yes,
that right?
Yes, that's right. I'm on Facebook under Susie Hansen.
Okay.
And I'd like to thank you very much, Paul, for giving me the opportunity to do this interview with you, and I look forward to meeting you and your group later in the year.
Thank you so much. It's been our pleasure, and all the best. We'll talk again.